2025, and we're going to carry over to 11/13 for your clarification. That's basically R4. We're going to start off with House Bill 2154. Our committee minister will talk to you about that.
House Bill 2154 appropriates $466,000 transferred from the Workers' Benefit Fund in DCBS to the Civil Rights Division of the Bureau of Labor and Industries for enforcing provisions of civil rights statutes related to injured workers. This is for the next biennium, 9901. Mike Stinson in the fiscal office has informed us that this does not need to go to Ways and Means because this money is already accounted for in the budget.
Thank you very much. Mr. Roberts.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Jack Roberts. I'm the commissioner of the Oregon Bureau of Labor and Industries. This bill would continue a funding source that we have used the last two sessions for four of our civil rights investigators. That represents approximately the percentage of our work that is used in enforcing the anti-discrimination provisions of Oregon's workers' comp laws. Discrimination against workers who have filed workers' comp claims in the past and workers who have wrongfully been denied reinstatement or reemployment because of taking workers' comp leave. This, in the past, had been handled simply as a part of our general fund funding of the agency. In 1995, the decision was made to take this out of the workers' comp system. It passed in 1995, really without much controversy. In 97, there was opposition. Some people felt it should not come out of the workers' compensation fund. Our position consistently has been that the positions are needed, the work is important. How it's funded is really for you and the governor to decide. The recommendation this year from the governor was to continue to fund that compensation system. We support that. I know there are some, and MRAC had indicated to us last year that they did not think that was appropriate. Again, for us, this is a philosophical issue. This is really a funding issue. I would like to take just a minute, though, and explain why I think it is appropriate to pay for this out of the workers' compensation system. The Worker Benefit Fund is paid for jointly by workers and by employers. So it is paid for on a mutual basis with the idea that this is an integral part of the workers' compensation system. If you recall, before the workers' comp reform in 1989, Oregon used to have workers' comp rates that were among the highest in the country. Every time people did a survey of business climate around the state, where it's good to do business, where it's bad to do business, our high workers' comp rates were one of the things identified as an impediment to businesses locating here. Since the workers' compensation reform, our workers' comp rates have gone down every year. We now have among the lowest workers' comp rates in the country. Every time they do a survey of places to do business, that's one of the positives that's identified about Oregon. But that was intended to be a trade-off, and a trade-off of having a less bureaucratic system, one that could not be abused, one that was limited, but that increased benefits to workers and that included stronger reinstatement and anti-discrimination provisions. And a lot of the labor folks who supported that compromise did so in part because of the strengthening of that part of the system. I believe that the anti-discrimination provisions are an integral part of the workers' compensation system. If we want that system to be self-sustaining and self-funding, I believe it's reasonable for the system itself to pay for the enforcement of the anti-discrimination and the reinstatement provisions. That's what this does. Again, I don't think this has to be a philosophical issue, but I think if we're going to look at how we pay for this, I certainly don't believe it is in any way illegitimate to expect the system itself to pay for that portion of it, since it is an integral part of maintaining our goal, which is to get people out of the workers' comp system and back to work.
So, thank you very much. Questions on the Senators?
Hi there. When MLAC took their vote, was it a unanimous vote?
Chairman, I don't remember. I don't think I was there when they took their initial vote on that. I believe that it was the manager representatives who felt the strongest about it. I think that former Representative Shipwreck was on that. I think supported paying it out of workers' comp fund, but went along in the end with that recommendation. So I'm not sure. And then this last year, after the situation we had last session, I was found that I was ready to back off and do this out of the general fund. I mean, there was adequate general fund to do that. And so I don't know if they actually took a formal vote at that time. but I couldn't really represent how the breakdown occurs on NWAC.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you
very much. Lori, or at least the Crystal, I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair, members of the Committee on Waste of Trustful with Associated Oregon Industries, and I just wanted to appear today to go on the record that AOI has supported the recommendations of NWAC, and NWAC did in fact make a recommendation in September of 1998 to discontinue the funding of the Bowie piece from the Workers' Benefit Fund. And that's contained in a report that I'm sure you've seen before that was distributed here to an interim committee. And one of the reasons that we think the funding should come out of the general fund as opposed to the worker benefit fund is that we're not aware of any other protected group of workers that have to provide the funding for to have their discrimination claims investigated. And so just from a policy standpoint, we believe that if it's important enough to be provided a service, which no one on AMLAC disagreed that it was an important service, we just didn't believe the funding was appropriate as we didn't support continued funding of the transfer of money to Hope Rehab through after the workers' comp reforms had been enacted. So I just wanted to go on the record for that and we just think the funding should be from additional other sources other than the worker benefit fund.
Ms. Buck, you want to testify on this bill? How come? Anybody else? Thank you very much. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 254 and go into work session.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2154 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. You don't seem very often that you haven't had any amendments.
Senator Deuce moves House Bill 2154 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Discussion, the objection.
Well, I have one question. But I'm really sorry that I have too many
things. Sorry, too.
I know, I have too many things going at once.
Really?
I know. And that is that there was a bill that I don't see in here that had a bitter pill in it for the workers' comp attorneys. And I don't mean safe. Is it in here?
Maybe.
Okay, thanks. All right.
Thanks for
okay. But I haven't had to really study it, and I have some very good Republican workers' comp attorneys, and I didn't want to do that. Okay. I mean, I didn't want to do it once they got something out of the deal. I'd like to do it, but I had to help them. Okay.
I think I've called for a roll call.
Yeah, I just have to ask some questions before I cast this vote.
There you.
Aye.
Aye.
Sure, I also 2.54 passed the Board of Recommendation. Do you feel comfortable saying
that?
And the chair will carry. Close the first session of House Bill 2154 and open the public hearing. Public hearing, possible session on House Bill 3537. I don't want to keep sunsetting that thing. We do need to get
some.
Brian, you tell us what the bill is here.
House Bill 3537 establishes a ballot title for the proposed constitutional amendment, which is contained in Senate Joint Resolution 23A. In addition.
No, you need to go to work.
Are you having a hard time?
Well,
this is good. Right, someplace. Okay, all right. What's our next one?
Why don't you just give us the explanation on what this thing is? This is a ballot title measure.
Oh, if the other goes forward.
Establishes a ballot title for Senate Governor Resolution 23, right?
Correct.
And,
but it's not the if, because I saw it on there.
I think it isn't the language, it's a ballot title on the first page in lines 7 and 20.
Yes, sir. Yes. Yeah. Result of the yes vote, result of the no vote, and then a summary. And it provides that if someone is dissatisfied with the ballot title that we prepare if we send this out, then they may seek a different ballot title under ORS 250.085, and that provision for seeking a different ballot title would apply to this ballot title, except that the Secretary of State would establish the deadline for filing a petition with the Supreme Court.
It's a normal process. The court does a ballot title. Well,
the
Attorney General or the DA or whoever does it. And then there's a process after that. If you don't like it, you can appeal it. You appeal it to court, and then you appeal it on. How is that process different from this one?
I understand that we many times prepare ballot titles for measures that we refer out. So that's the same way. Everything is the same if there is a petition for a different ballot title, except that the Secretary of the State would establish a deadline for filing a petition if somebody is dissatisfied with the ballot title that we prepare.
So they go directly to court to set the ballot title?
Well, they would, yes. You would petition the Supreme Court to seek a different ballot title. And that's how it's set out in ORS
250.085. I'm happy to vote it out. I'm voting against most of the ballot measures that we prepare this session because I think there's a regular process that we make everybody else go through, and we ought to go through it too, but getting this to the floor is not a problem.
Okay.
I move HB 3537 to the floor with the House recommendation.
Commissioner moves the House Bill 3537 to the floor with the House recommendation. Discussions, objections, your name, first of all, Lopez. Senator
Duke?
Aye.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Chair Rye. House Bill 3537 passed the floor with the House recommendation. Do you want to feel comfortable with your answer?
Randy Miller's here. Randy Miller. Yeah. Randy Miller's still. If the other one passes, Randy can do it.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. We'll give him a chance. He doesn't want you to know.
Okay.
I know what I'm talking about.
But it'll work.
We're going to recess until 7:15.
Yeah, he's a good chair. He's just run along.
Oh, he's a good chair.
Recess until 3 p.m. Committee on Public Affairs, and we open the workshop on HJR 4. Mr. Bryan.
Thank you. My name is Dean Bryan. I'm a senator. I'm also an attorney. I'd like to be an attorney again for this board, where I got called senator District 27. And I became involved in HJR 4 at the request of Senate President and the minority leader. They initially asked me to carry the bill, and frankly, I was reluctant to do that, but for some reasons I agreed to it. It sticks with the discussion just about the legal issues. So if I can talk about that for a moment and then offer up my amendment. Last fall, the Tanner case was decided by the Oregon Court of Appeals, and it held that public employees in Oregon, our employers, public employers in Oregon, violate Article 1, Section 20 of the Constitution, the Oregon Constitution, when they provide health insurance benefits to married employees and spouses, and not provide those same benefits to the same tax target of their gay and lesbian employees. And so holding the court found that gay and lesbian Oregonians be entitled to certain considerations with respect to their rights under the Oregon Constitution. While the court standard did not expressly address the constitutionality of Oregon statute defining marriage, which is ORF 106.010, both legislative counsel, Craig Chamoff, and Deputy Attorney General David Schuman suggested in their testimony before the House Civil Judiciary Committee that the Tanner case may call into question the constitutionality of such a statute and probably other statutes that deal with marriage. The House version of H.R. 4 addressed this by placing the definition of marriage in Article 15 of Section 5 of the Constitution. It provided that to be valid and recognized in Oregon, a marriage may consist only of the union of one male person and one female and must be solemnized according to law. The Senate amendment that I'm offering today was for the Dash A6s. Do not place the definition of marriage in the Constitution. Instead, it provides that the legislative process has the constitutional authority to define marriage. This is what the legislature has done for the last 104 years. And it does not in any way change the constitutional rights for women that are in the Tanner case. In other words, it doesn't roll back the decision nor is it intended to. So that's what the Dash A4 amendments do. As you can see, it says the Constitution is amended to read that the legislative assembly may by law prescribe the terms and conditions under which persons may marry, and that, of course, will also require the governor's signatures during laws that would go through the legislative process. And that's what the amendment
is. I believe, referred to it as Dash A4.
A6.
A6.
A6, not A4. H-A-R-4.
A6.
I talked to House members who were sponsors of the original bill, and then Wayne Shetterly, who carried the compromise in the House, and they indicated they would concur with the submission.
Questions?
Senator Bryant, we know that the legislative assembly may by law prescribe the terms and conditions under which persons may marry, so why put it in the Constitution?
Because of the candidacy of the constitutional authorities in this building, and I'm speaking of legislative counsel and in the Attorney General's office, feel that the authority of the legislature to do that is a risk. That the second candidate case, the son of Tanner, it's just phrased properly to that court using the same reasoning that they did in Tanner, may conclude that the legislature does not have authority and that it's discriminatory based upon Article 1, Section 20 of the Oregon Constitution.
So our legislative council believes that a court decision may get a ruling that says that anybody can marry anybody in Oregon?
What? And I wasn't there to hear the testimony on the House Judiciary Committee, but from what I understand, the testimony of not only Clay Chamoff, but also David Schuman, was that the Tanner case called into question the constitutionality of the statute dealing with the definition of marriage.
Did it do that by the reference at the end that so we're not dealing with this because we haven't been asked to?
Yes. And the reasoning they used in the case. The reasoning that was applied in the Tanner decision. And I'll paraphrase was that first of all, it was clear that OHU never intended to discriminate when they adopted their rule that you would provide benefits to spouses. But as a practical matter, the effect of that was to discriminate against same-sex relationships. And that in fact, then made it violate Article 1, Section 20. The same argument could be applied to the statutes that define marriage, saying that, you know, there's not a chance when this was enacted to be discriminatory, but the fact that the matter is. And so consequently, that also violates Article 1, Section 20 of the Constitution and is unconstitutional. The other factor or case that could be brought not dealing with the definition of marriage itself but a private employer needs to. And with the issue, since you provide benefits to spouses, you have to provide benefits to same-sex other partners, otherwise you're discriminating. And that's the same rationale that would have applied in Tanner. Article 1, Section 20 of the Constitution provides, no law shall be passed granting to any citizen or any class of citizens privileges or immunities which, upon the same terms, shall not apply equally to all citizens. And so the argument would be the current definition of marriage doesn't do that, and so it's unconstitutional.
Which is it that you're hoping to avoid with this? A decision that would extend benefits to a broader category of employers, or a decision that would prohibit same-sex marriages?
Neither. That's not my intent. If employers want to provide benefits to significant others in a cohabitation relationship, whether or not they're same-sex or not, I think they should do that. They should have the right, the flexibility to do that. And certainly that happens now. Some of your larger companies do that. I think Nike does. Many of your airline companies do, et cetera. And that's fine. If I was faced with that situation in my law firm, I would try to accommodate that. I might have to deal with my insurance company to see if the coverage is available, the cost of such a thing. Your other recourse is not to provide health benefits to spouses, and then you're treating everyone the same. I don't think that's necessarily good public policy, so that could be a reaction to it. On the issue of who should be allowed to marry, I think that should be something that the legislature determines. And in the past, we've done that by telling clerks, you know, here's who can request and receive marriage certificates and what the conditions are. To me, that's a logical legislative decision. And if it, in the future, the Oregon legislature wanted to change that, they could. The benefit of these particular amendments is that it does allow more flexibility because it doesn't put the definition of marriage in the Constitution. And then you can only change it with constitutional change. So I'm confident some group, of course, someone would try to accomplish that. So I think this is a very good compromise. Would preserve the public policy of the legislature making decisions.
Other further questions? Yeah. Not sure would entertain a motion to move the Chairman of the Dash A6 Limits to HJR 4. Senator Tarnall has moved the Dash A6 Amendments to HJR 4. Further discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. The Chairman moves the vote amended to floor due class recommendation. Senator Tarnall has moved HJR 4 as amended to floor due class recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator Duke?
No.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Senator Carno?
Aye.
Senator Wong?
No.
Chair Sutton?
Aye. I receive the necessary majority of HJR 4, moves forth to pass recommendation.
May I ask a question?
Yes.
I know I'm late for attending to a business in the House, but did anyone talk about why, did the Senator talk about Vermont and why this is necessary at this time?
Well, he's going yes and she's going no.
No. He did the last part, he didn't do the first part, how's that?
Okay. What does that mean?
Why it's necessary but not Vermont.
Oh, because this summer Vermont's probably going to
vote.
No.
Oh.
No. I mean, should be really bad if it's good on the floor.
You can
get the bill out of the floor.
Okay.
Senator Bryant will be carrying the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I want to turn out a possible minority report.
Senator Duke, the serve notice possible minority report.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Oh. This is a person from the miracle that has been joined?
You do. There were two no's, so I'm throwing out the possibility.
I just wonder who was going to join.
You never know.
Maybe one of these guests.
No, that doesn't work that way.
Well, Harrisburg will not be a minority report.
Oh, I will also get it, so.
Oh.
That's a long way.
So, there's notice of possible minority report. Senator Harris Goops and Senator Wiley. Over the work session on House Bill 2199, bill that was referred back for other reasons than work that needed to be done upon it, I would like to move that bill back to the floor as is. Would it be past recommendation?
I need a motion. Sure, I'll move House Bill 2199 to the floor. Would it be past recommendation?
Senator Tarno has moved House Bill 2199 to the floor to do past recommendation.
Discussion? Mr. Chair, this is a really good bill that we've been waiting for a long time. It's gonna help. I mean, we get $9 federal for every $1 we put in state out of this, so this is going to be a big boost to our new agency.
Okay. I agree.
Senator Colorado.
Yes.
Senator Duke.
Hi.
Senator
Shannon. Hi.
Senator
Carter.
Hi.
Senator
Wild.
Hi.
Senator Carter.
Hi.
Oh, you can get a quorum.
Okay.
Did you?
Other
committee?
No way.
You're right. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 2199 moves forward to do past recommendations. Carry you?
Okay.
Senator Duke, carry. We're going to recess briefly to go to the floor to do the vote, and we will come back here just as soon as we can. House Bill 3607.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3607 to the floor due pass recommendation.
Senator Tarno has moved House Bill 3607 to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Discussion? This bill was referred to committee at the request of outside members. They changed their mind. They don't want to amend it. We will be sending it back at in its present form and the task clerk to call the roll.
Senator
Carter. Aye. Senator Wild. Aye. Aye. I received the necessary majority. House Bill 3607. Turns the floor to do pass recommendation. Chair will carry. Now, we come down to the
public hearing. Yeah.
Open. Public hearing on House Bill 3628.
Look at that. Can you fit in?
No one signed up.
More people.
I don't know. What the heck?
No amendment even signed up.
Did you know? I can't even
understand.
No. We got a mirror. Sure, I'll say I'm
one. Not working.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, members, House Bill 3628. Prohibits athlete agents from making certain types of contacts with student athletes. And to help enforce that, it provides that students are no longer eligible to play for their schools if they sign agent contracts, endorsement contracts, or professional sports service contracts. It requires athlete agents to obtain permits from the Department of Education prior to soliciting student athletes.
In your packet,
I apologize, Chair Starman, City. As Brian indicated, the prohibits athlete agents from making certain types of contacts with student athletes. This bill comes to you from Representative Gianella, and in your packet you should have testimony from her. Unfortunately, she's not able to make it before. I contacted the University of Oregon, and I made contact with the Department of Education, and they are in support of this measure.
We do have staff from Representative Gianella's office if you have any questions about the bill.
Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, I hear you. Yes. Move it.
I will tell you that I understand the concerns on the health side, which, as far as I can tell, were few, were the felony and misdemeanor charges against the agent and athlete for breaking the rules.
In the first testimony, we're going to close the public hearing open work session on House Bill 3628.
Shall I move it? I will move 3628, HB 3628, for a two-pass recommendation.
Senator Wild has moved HB 3628 for a two-pass recommendation. Further discussion? Hearing none, clerk, call the roll.
Senator Chardo?
Aye.
Senator Wild?
Aye.
Aye. I received the necessary majority. House Bill 3628 moves support the two-pass recommendation.
Okay.
Senator Wild, carry. Not to be heard until 4:30. We're at 4:30, isn't that nice?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we did it. From the speaker's office, he just don't. I said, look,
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2001. Administrator will.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2001 came back to the committee after debate on the floor with some objections. We have in front of us the dash C9, which addressed those concerns that were raised on the floor. Just to paraphrase the concerns, were with language as to who would determine if somebody filed a complaint on if the argument in the voter's pamphlet was substantially related to that measure. The amendment takes out all of that language. So there will be no subjectiveness in determining the complaint. And I do believe that that addresses what, to my understanding, the member has worked with the Speaker's office in working up with these amendments. So they are compromised language. So the bill is before us.
All right. Well, we will be at ease for a moment until JL can be found. Question about polling booths in this bill.
Yeah, I like polling booths, but I thought we got rid of them last session. I just wondered why we were recreating them.
Okay. My name is J.L. Wilson, for the record, legislative director for Speaker Snodgrass. The seeing gross version, you're right, it does have a provision that asks that counties with at least 35,000 electors maintain at least one polling place in the county, and that it is up to the county clerk to maintain a sufficient number. We do ask a minimum of one in the bill.
The thing I wonder if it doesn't say polling place, it says polling booth.
Yeah.
County clerk for years maintained a polling place at the county clerk's office.
Sure, and that would suffice.
And it was a place to drop off, even with vote by mail, it was a place to drop off the ballot if you didn't want to mail it in. So we didn't have a poll tax. But I was curious because now we're requiring a voting booth. And do you know why? And poll books, which we haven't had in a while.
Chair Starr, Senator Dukes, we conferred with county clerks across the state and asked if it would be a problem if they maintained a minimum of one polling booth, even in the rural counties. They suggested that at the very least, they would be able to maintain one at the county clerk's office or at the courthouse or someplace with no problem.
I understand they can. Where did the bill come from? Comes from your boss. Okay.
Yes.
I just wondered why we wanted to. I mean, we must have suggested to them we'd like to do this, and I was curious as to why.
Chair Starr, Senator Duke, is the Speaker's contention that she wanted to avoid situations of coercion, situations where people did not feel comfortable voting at home in the presence of a family for whatever reason.
Okay.
And that is why the alternative is presented in the
bill. Makes sense. Thank you.
Is another option?
Mm-hmm. Okay,
Other questions?
I'd like to address that because personally, in the past, I have often gone to the county elections office, picked up my ballot, gone to their booth there, filled it out, dropped it in their slot, and headed on my way so that I could vote at my convenience. And I still might do that even with vote by mail. As soon as they're available, I may go in and I may get it before they've mailed it out and I may vote. And so, and I always drop it off. I always do. So if I haven't filled it out and I want to drop it off, I'll probably go in, use their booth, fill it out, and drop it off.
Are there any problems with this, Elaine?
Chair Starr, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Colleen Seelock. I'm the Director of Elections for the state. I missed some of JL's testimony. I just wanted to make sure we have always assumed that clerks are going to issue ballots in their office throughout the election period and they can be voted there. The reference in the bill talks about setting up additional places where people can go take their ballot, which is the difference in a polling place election. Polling places, you also issue ballots. This merely provides a place where you can take your ballot and cast it. And so there are some requirements that counties provide those other optional places that you can take your ballot once you receive it, go cast it there, and then drop it in paper. So I just wanted to make sure that it was clear that we are not recreating polling places at any other site in Oregon for the purposes of issuing ballots, except at the 36 county clerk's office. So I think this is really on the record.
Have you looked at the -C9 amendment?
We have, Chair, and we understand that what they're trying to do is remove the review that was placed there that the Secretary of State or Attorney General would have on voter pamphlet arguments. And so what this does is it takes out all the new language and returns current law to that status. So we're very comfortable with the -9 amendment.
Mr.
Chair. Colleen, my understanding was we were complete vote by mail at this point, and yet there's new language added to the statutes here that says, for each election not conducted by mail, the county clerk will identify electors who apply for an absentee ballot, and it goes on and talks about how they're identified in a poll book. All of that led me to believe, one, that when we had this separate poll booth in every county, that we would also have a poll book. But also, why the language?
Chair Starr, Senator Duke, the language that I believe you're referring to, which begins
Section 4,
yes, is amending Chapter 253, which is the absentee statutes. This language only would apply if there is some unique reason that a county clerk would choose to hold a polling place election rather than vote by mail.
Is that an option?
That is an option for special elections where they get to make that choice. For example, in Clatsop County, if they chose for reasons which haven't happened in the state in about 4 or 6 years.
To amend a charter or something.
To amend the charter and they decide for reasons they want to hold it at the polls, that is still available to them.
Okay.
The last time that was done was, I believe, 1995 in Klamath County. But we haven't had a county choose to do a polling place election since then because of the economics and efficiencies we get through vote by mail. And so this language would all only be used if there was that rare occasion. And if the state ever chose, if we got a special referral in the legislative assembly told us to hold it by a polling place because accessible by mail is statutory, and you directed us to hold them, then this, these changes would apply to that kind of an election.
Okay. I think I lost the other. Oh, do I understand correctly that Pasadena County will not be able to go back to opening their ballots prior to 8 o'clock on election night and running them but not release the results?
Sheriff Starks and Duke, they can open them, they cannot run them.
Okay.
They cannot begin tallying the ballots until election day itself, and then it is a Class C felony to release results before 8 o'clock at night. Many counties, by practice, will start running ballots through the machine about 3 or 4 in the afternoon, but you can set your computers not to print any results, which is what they do. But, yes, they can begin opening them.
Because they were told the last time Area General that they could not do that. And,
right.
And so we had a much longer election. So now they can go back to doing that. They simply can't release it.
Chair Starr, Senator Dukes, that was the provision because you can't open absentee ballots at a polling place election until you get the poll book back.
Right.
So you can compare them. And they inadvertently applied the standard vote by mail rule, which allows you to open those 5 days.
Okay.
So I think we're all in the same page.
Mr. Chair, I thought this was a good bill when it came to the floor. I like the substantial stuff. I don't want somebody selling their house in a voter's pamphlet or advertising their business, which they have been known to do since then. So, just thank you, Senator.
Thank you. Any further questions? Does the witnesses, anybody else desire to witness this bill? We have not anyone else signed up. Public hearing, merchandise on. House Bill 2001.
Mr. Chair, I move a dash C9 amendments to House Bill 2001.
Senator Tarnos moves a dash C9 amendments to House Bill 2001. Any further discussion? Any opposition?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Show Senator Duke is opposing.
Just me. Okay. We had 2 meetings here.
We've the amendment.
For the bill is amended, Mr. Chair, the floor is pass recommendation.
Senator Tarno has moved House Bill 2001 as amended, the floor to do pass recommendation. Further discussion?
No gain.
Clerk, call the roll.
No.
Senator Chairman?
Aye.
Senator
Tarno?
Aye.
Senator Wild? Aye. Aye. I receive the necessary majority. Bill 2001 has been moved to the floor to do pass recommendation. Carrier?
You know, they're comfortable. I think they're going to do this real well.
Actually, I'm probably going to vote for it in the floor.
Oh, there's a while. Well, a while ago, Carrier. I guess. With that, please.
Well, I'm going to ask a question.
Oh, it's too late. Devil down.
What happened to 3607?
Okay.
Did you amend it?
Nope.
A new hearing.
We'll go back to court.
Okay.
I guess we did.
Okay. Did you record? It's going back.
And I got a 68 leftovers. Is it important that I have one leftover?
That
moved before you write.
Okay. And 3607 moved?
Yeah.
What? Yes.
And we're recessed or adjourned?
We are.